And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show on this Thursday. It's the 23rd of May, 2024. How are you all keeping out there across the Northwest on air and across the world online? It's great to have you on board for another 9 till noon show. And as you might be familiar with at this stage, we're heading towards the local and European elections. And the second and third hour of this show is dedicated to our election debates. Our focus is on Lifford Stranorlar. So if you're listening in the Lifford Stranorlar area and there's an issue that you want raised with our guests, and we've had a great response in other electoral areas so far, so don't let us down there. Let us know what you want to talk about, what you want the candidates to talk about. 0860 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. So that's Lifford Stranorlar, the first of two debates live on the 9 till noon show between 10 and 12. We've a lot to get through in this hour as well, including an interview with Education Minister Norma Foley and some good news for a school in Barnesmore as well, south of the county. Let's start with a look at the Tyrconnell Tribune, and the ICSA is set to quiz EU candidates. The Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association is to hold an election forum in the Clannery Hotel at Letterkenny on Monday evening at 7:30, and all candidates in the Midlands Northwest constituency have been invited to participate. Malcolm Thompson, chair of the ICSA in Donegal, said the forum will give the farming community an opportunity to hear the candidates explain their strategy for the 5 years ahead as the new parliament takes office from next month. And there was a hustings last night in Killybegs, which I was asked to chair, and 10 of the candidates turned up to that. Three fishing organisations had organised it, and it was really quite interesting. Fantastic audience, actually. Really, the function room in the Tower Hotel there was packed out. And as I say, quite informative, I think. The Donegal News this morning: an unprecedented crisis is looming in the childcare sector in Donegal, with significant challenges being posed by defective concrete blocks and staffing issues, a leading practitioner has warned. Manager of Donegal County Childcare Committee, Trish McLaughlin, has spoken of her fears for children, parents and staff amid a testing landscape for the sector across the county. Donegal County Childcare Committee Limited is a local government-supported agency that works for the development, sustainability and advancement of high-quality early childhood care and education in County Donegal. The Derry News headline this morning: my child is not a failure. A number of Derry children have been left without secondary school places, it can be revealed. Children discovered on Saturday what schools they will be attending in September. However, the Derry News understands that over 20 children in the city have not secured a school ahead of the new term. One of the concerned parents said the system just doesn't make any sense. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Independent. And a total of 239 patients died on trolleys in the ED at University Hospital Limerick from 2019 to 2023. That's the highest number among all major hospitals on the West Coast from Limerick to Donegal. 239 in the University Hospital of Limerick. And it is consistently the most overcrowded hospital in the country. And it has the highest rate of people dying on trolleys. This story just, it's not on the front of the pages, but it just really jumped out at me. In the same period, 195 people died on ED trolleys at University Hospital Galway, 150 at Sligo University Hospital, and 108 at Letterkenny University Hospital. The figures are for patients deemed unwell enough to be admitted and who died on a trolley in ED while waiting for a bed. So, in Donegal, between 2019 and 2023, 108 people in Letterkenny went to the hospital or were taken to the hospital. They were deemed to be sick enough to be admitted, so they would have been counted on trolley watch figures, and they died, died in the ED. 239 is shocking in Limerick. Any is shocking, but 108 across Letterkenny. And I'm acutely conscious that some of the families of those who are counted within those numbers are listening today. If you have something to say about that, please get in touch, 086 60 25000. Well, It's election season, of course, not just here, but now in Britain and Northern Ireland, because UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has stunned Westminster by calling a snap election for July 4th, 4 months earlier than had been predicted. Mr. Sunak made the announcement outside 10 Downing Street yesterday afternoon in the pouring rain as anti-Brexit campaigners tried to drown him out with a loudspeaker blaring D-reams, things can only get better. Now, what I don't understand about some of the decisions people make, he was going to make this announcement yesterday morning. He knew it was going to be piddling rain. He also should have known that just at the end of Downing Street there are gates, that it would try and be disrupted. He would look like a damp squid. Why not use the weather as an opportunity to break from tradition and say, right, press, I'm going to meet you in this hotel. Do it there. You don't have Doreen screaming in the background and you don't look like a wet cat. But he insisted on doing it that way. Maybe he's a traditionalist. And the reason he did, I would imagine, is that they were hoping the UK economy would show signs of recovery, marginal signs, but not enough to see British banks take down interest rates. So no point waiting to the autumn, because it wouldn't have had an impact on the electorate's way of thinking. Also, too, they were hoping that government to reduce taxes heading into a autumn election. But the economy is such a state over there that they actually don't have the headroom, financial headroom, to be able to deliver those tax cuts. So I suppose he's saying, look, I'm 20 points behind Labour. It's not going to improve. We might as well do this in the good weather. And that seemingly is what they are doing. Now, that's going to have my interest in it. I can't speak for you guys out there. Is the implications in Northern Ireland, of course, and how Sinn Féin, DUP, and others might fare. Obviously, there'll be analysis of that in the weeks ahead, so stay tuned. I've got our hands full at the moment with local and Europeans. The Irish Farmers Journal today: over a quarter of the country's 48,000 small farmers are planning to leave out the farms, or sorry, lease out the farms over the next 5 years. Their plans to leave active farming would see approximately 425,000 acres coming onto the land leasing market. That is the equivalent of one in every 25 acres of land farmed in the country going up for lease. So does this mean really that we're seeing a and as you know, I don't have a farming background, but is this really moving into the sort of consolidation of farming? In other words, the big boys are able to, because of their resources, they'll be able to clean up this land. The small farmer will just be a landholder, at least out. Is this the way it's going? The big boys have all the land and all the resources, and small farmers over the next 5 years feel there's no future for them. They have to get out. Small beef and sheep producers farmed an average of 13 hectares in 2023, resulting in an average farm income of just €2,600. That's according to Chagas's latest small farms survey. We are missing the Mirror and the Sun. We shall survive. We have just the Star now. Foreign-born election candidates have reported receiving serious abuse and threats when out canvassing, including being told to F off back home. One local election candidate told the Star that he has now contacted the Gardaí to report an incident that saw his election team told to take down his posters and to F off back to where yous came from. Of Fine Gael's 339 local election candidates, 16 are from migrant backgrounds. Damien English, director of local elections for Fine Gael, said nearly all the party's candidates from a migrant background have been targeted. This includes being threatened and intimidated while canvassing, sustained harassment online from far-right social media accounts, some based in the UK and the US, family members and homes being targeted, and the removing and or defacing of election posters. Now, in relation to the latter, inexcusable, but that's across the board, seemingly. It seems to be across the board. Many, many people are falling foul of that. Right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with a chat I had a little earlier on with Minister Norma Foley. Stay right where you are. Moving on in the programme now, we're joined on the programme by the Minister for Education, Minister Norma Foley. Minister, good morning to you. Welcome to Donegal. And I suppose, talk to us about what you are doing in the county this day.
Well, good morning, Greg, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here. I think this is probably my fourth, if not fifth, official visit to Donegal. And I am here, I'm working obviously with Minister Charlie McConnell and Senator Niall Blaney, who are very much keeping me on my toes as regards investment in Donegal. And so I can point to over the last 3 years, over 120 million euro has been invested in a variety of, you know, buildings, whether new builds or extensions for schools in Donegal. And equally, you know, it's given me an opportunity then to return to, you know, see, I suppose, building projects come to fruition or in the process of fruition, you know, projects that I engaged with previously here. So, for example, last night I was in Sculvira, and this is a school who has recently received a very significant extension of a 3 science lab, home economics room, DCG lab, and 4 classroom SEN base. But I happened to be there for the tail end of the Leaving Certificate graduation, and it was wonderful to meet students there in Buncrana, and just such a warm and positive welcome from them, and I want to wish them well and all the various students who are graduating. But then I also met with representatives from the 3 school campus at Crana College, which has received the green light from the department. This morning I'm going to Scull Isagon, who have also received the letter of intent to proceed to construction. And then, of course, you know, we've Moville Community College, which is going to construction, and also Moville Gaelscoil. So fairly busy agenda. And then moving on, obviously, to Letterkenny, to Errigal College, to officially open their 10 classroom extension. I'll also be visiting with St. Union Secondary School there, who are waiting to go to tender, but they're in the process. And then, of course, you know, the Little Angel Special School is under construction. And I also have a very positive announcement this morning for the Donegal area, where St. Francis' National School in Barnesmore will also receive approval today for an extension, which will include, you know, additional classroom and also a 2 classroom base for special education teaching facility. So there's a lot happening in Donegal in terms of school buildings and school progression, and it's a reflection of the excellent work that happens in the schools right throughout Donegal every single day, and an acknowledgement of, you know, the growth and expansion that's happening here too. As I say, significant investment just to this point of over 120 million, with more to come, and other projects. There's a number of other projects in the pipeline also for Donegal.
More generally speaking, I suppose, a lot of commentary in the papers over the last couple of days, and some comments from you as it relates to the protection of our children as they attend these schools. And it's great to hear the developments being announced in relation to mobile phone usage, in relation to social media access. I suppose outside of you know, some of the perennial problems or the problems that have been around for ages, these are two that we really haven't yet managed to get our heads around properly, to properly protect our children. What would you like to see? What can you deliver?
Well, look, you're quite correct. Look, I suppose the whole world of social media brings with it enormous opportunity, but it also brings with it enormous challenge, and we need to armour ourselves, particularly our young people, against those challenges. And, you know, just some weeks ago I hosted a social media summit, and at that summit we had the mobile phone providers, and I asked them to engage with and to support and endorse the campaign or the initiative of the Department of Education, which is really to keep childhood smartphone free. That's particularly children who are attending primary schools. And they asked for time to consider it, and I was very pleased that yesterday they came back. That was Vodafone, 3, Air, Onpost Mobile, Virgin Media and Tesco Mobile. These are operators who have more than 95% share of the Irish mobile phone market, and they've come back to say they will endorse and will support that initiative of the department to keep childhood smartphone free. And that means we're working with parents' associations right throughout the country, and I really want to acknowledge the great work that these parents' associations are putting in, so that, you know, parents and schools will come together as a collective and make the decision that they will not purchase smartphones for children whilst in the primary school. And, you know, it's not about pitting one parent against another. It's recognising that a year or 2 years ago parents might have made decisions to purchase smartphones, but now we know so much more, and we, through the Department of Education, through our education centres, through online webinars, we're making this information available to parents. And the information is quite shocking, where, you know, we have so many national and international reports, a lot of information coming from the online regulator, just telling us really that there are children as young as 6 and 7 who are being exposed to quite horrific content that no parent or guardian would want young children to witness. And, you know, we're also conscious as well that, you know, no parent or guardian would allow a child, you know, in a room with somebody coming into their house, a stranger, somebody that they didn't know, and to have that operating in an unsupervised manner. But that's exactly what's happening in bedrooms, and it's happening in sitting rooms right across the country. So we're saying to parents, you need to be vigilant here. You know, children are being exploited online. We have to be really, really careful of the access that our children have to smartphones. And we're truly saying to parents, there is no need whatsoever for children to have access to a smartphone.
But that's not working. I mean, parenting isn't working. Do we need
To be fair, I would disagree there. I think information is power. And really, we are seeing right across the country, and I visit countries the length and breadth, or schools the length and breadth of the country, and I see where parents' associations have taken up this initiative by the department. And we're providing resources for the parents. We've issued the guidelines to the schools. We're providing information sessions through our education centres. We're providing online webinars. And parents are leading out. And this is happening right throughout the country, to come together as a collective. Yeah. Because I understand, you know, if two or three children in the class have the smartphone, well, then other children want it as well. So we need the parents to work together and say, listen, we'll all sign up for this. So we've achieved a lot in this space at the moment. We certainly have much more work to do, but the department won't be found lacking in terms of putting the resources there and making them available to parents to make the right decisions.
One of the greatest concerns to actually was parents, teachers, principals and charities involved in this area was changes by the Department of Education to the allocation of additional teacher supports from next year. I think one of the key issues was some change of terminology, and the teachers we were speaking to, the parents that we were speaking to, say that this would leave children at a deficit. It's not as inclusive as what went before, and also it would affect every child in the classroom. Is there any update in relation to that?
I think you're referring to the allocation of the special teachers.
That's correct. Sorry, I should have been more clear. Yes.
Yeah. So just to say in relation to the allocation of the special education teachers, the model that was used was in place since 2017, but there was a commitment given at the time that that would be subject to review. And so the department engaged with schools right across the country, and from the schools, it was very clearly coming back that there were many strengths, but there were many deficits also in that model, and there was a need to look at doing things differently, and in particular ensuring that children most in need of that assistance and additional support would receive it. And so heretofore, there were a number of different criteria, but the first, I suppose, observation that was being made by the schools was that the criteria was not giving significant recognition to the school profile, in other words, the individual needs of each school across the country. Secondly, there was an understanding that children with complex needs or very significant additional needs, that their needs were not being met in the model, for the simple reason that in the old model, we relied on information regarding complex needs to come from the various, we'll say, HSE areas, the local areas. And I would have to be truthful and say that that information in some areas was ample, was sufficient. In other areas, it was less so, and in others, it was less again. So it meant there wasn't a fair recognition of the issue of complex needs or additional challenges for children right across the country. And that was flagged consistently by schools. So in this instance, what we've done is we have said complex needs must be recognised, and so we will rely on the data that schools themselves have from whatever testing is done in the schools. And if it's a thing that the young person wasn't in a position to take any of that testing because of their complex need, they would automatically be given maximum weighting in the new model. So it's a recognition that children who are most in need should get the maximum weighting here. So this is the new model that's in. It is a new model. For the first time ever, we have introduced the model well in advance of the operation of the next school year, which is the 24-25 school year, so that schools would have ample time to prepare themselves. And we have also said to schools that for the first time, we will review it in advance. If your school wishes to review your allocation, we will review it in advance of the operation of the school.
Do you
and that's
recognize,
actually working at the moment.
But just some of the language that they used at the time, I think it referenced off the top of my head that a lot of children with complex needs now were in special classes or were in schools specific to their needs. and they were being resourced separately. And that doesn't sound like inclusion. That's what a lot of teachers and particularly parents weren't happy about, that we seem to be moving away from an inclusive school environment and conceding that children, many of them with Down syndrome, for an example, are now in special classes or in special schools rather than being integrated with the rest of their peers. Are you not concerned that that could be a spin-off of these changes?
No, absolutely not. On the contrary, we're offering choice to parents. We're saying to parents, look, there's an individual need, and you know, so we need to find the opportunity from an education point of view that best meets the need of the child. So, for example, we're saying, if it's a case that mainstream education is the option, well, then that must be facilitated. And I would have to say, well, 95% plus of all of our children are actually educated in mainstream school settings, and I think that's important. But equally so, I will say to you that, you know, we have looked at the addition of special classes because that's an opportunity for some students and it meets their needs. And so we have now more than 3,000 special classes in the system, two-thirds of which have been delivered, you know, under this government, recognising that that's an appropriate need for some students. We've also recognised that there, for others, there's a need for special schools, and we have suitably resourced that as well. And we have, under this government, more than 11 new special schools being provided for. And I've referenced, for example, a brand new school in terms of special education also being provided for in Donegal under Little Angel Special School. But equally so, the important thing is that the young person is resourced, whether it's in mainstream, whether it's in the special class, or whether it's in the special school, recognising that there is a diversity of needs for children and we must cater for each of them. So I think we look at things in the round and we look at things in the whole, and I think that's recognising the diversity of, I suppose, individuality and needs that children might have in the education system.
Education Minister Norma Foley, thank you so much for your time this morning. And you're very welcome back to the programme. Right, transition year students are involved in a project at St Catherine's School in Killybegs, aiming to reinforce the message about staying safe on our roads and driving without distraction. They've developed a video which highlights the dangers of irresponsible decisions, such as having too many people in the car, texting while driving, and drink driving. Two of the people involved in this project are Danny and Ellie Cassidy Battles, and both of them are with us now. Ladies, thank you very much for your time. How are you keeping?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. It's lovely to have you with us. And I suppose, firstly, as much as you want to and it's okay for you, describe to us, you know, why it was important for you to become involved in this project.
So I feel like it was just so important to be involved because everybody in our area has been so affected by what's happened to us and the liberties that were taken by the school and by our teachers to create the video were just so important and so near and dear to our hearts. And it was just so important for us to get involved with it.
And sorry, is that Danny speaking, is it, or Ellie?
I'm Ellie.
Ellie, okay. Sorry about that. I should have asked before, shouldn't I? Because Danny, both you and Ellie very sadly lost your mother in a road traffic collision not long ago now, 2017. It's ever present, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So can you describe to us a little bit about the video and the message it tries to get across? Either of the two, you, whichever is more comfortable, it's fine.
I feel like the message of the video really is, it can do harm. The slogan throughout the video is, oh sure, it won't do any harm. And as we see throughout the video, these little instances can all just create such a catastrophic event. When there's overcrowding in cars or drink driving. And I think it's a very, very good message.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff is avoidable, isn't it? It's about us sort of thinking twice when we get into a car. And I like that phrase. What was it? How did you describe it? That it'll be okay? Or what was that phrase that you used?
It'll do no harm.
It'll do no harm. Yeah, indeed. Exactly. Is Miss Caroline Gallagher there as well, I wonder?
Yep, she is.
How are you?
I am. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm very, very good. You must be very proud of the students and Danny and Ellie's involvement in this project.
Oh, we are, yeah. We as a school and just the wider community, we're so proud of firstly the transition years for coming on board this project to raise awareness of the dangerous driving behaviours, and then taking Danny and Ellie on board. So bravely they came on board to share their story of how these behaviours have affected their lives.
Yeah, and both Danny and Ellie recognise that obviously this is a very personal tragedy for them and it's affected them very, very deeply, but it's a whole community and a whole wider family gets affected following a fatal road traffic collision.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone here in St. Catharines and indeed the wider community of Killybegs, Brockless and far beyond are so proud of the two girls for bravely sharing their story and being on the news and everything. It's not easy, but they've done so well and they've spoke so well.
And often too, you know, on programmes like this, you try and choose a sensitive time to talk about, you know, road traffic safety. So say, God forbid, if someone's passed away overnight, or you say, right, well, we can't really talk about that now because it could be seen to be insensitive. But unfortunately, such is the carnage on our roads. There's very few times, sadly, there is a space where it feels appropriate to talk about the road safety message. Do you get that, Danny and Ellie? I presume it's very difficult for you guys every time that you hear of another life lost.
Oh, definitely. And when we were speaking to RTE, there was something very similar said to us. And the first thing that I think that came into my head was that it's almost constant. It's so discouraging, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's why we're so happy to get this message across and to be supporting our community and to be speaking on behalf of our school. Do you agree?
Yeah.
And obviously, about speaking about your own situation publicly, has that been difficult, or in some way as well too, you're making your mum very proud as well, I suppose, in getting this message across. But it's not going to be easy for either of the two of you, I'm sure.
I didn't find it too difficult because I was so used to kind of telling people in school if they asked me about it, so it wasn't too difficult. But some days it can be difficult if I'm thinking about it or anything.
Yeah, okay. And your school friends and teachers and all have been very good to the two of you over the last 7 years, I'd imagine. They're for you when you need them.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've had amazing support in school.
Can I ask you, Miss Gallagher, how others can see this video, how it's being distributed? Because it's one of those things I think everybody needs to see.
Well, at the moment, the video is on Donegal Daily. It was shared last week on Donegal Daily's Facebook page. It should be on the RT News bulletin as well, and we're hoping that the RSA will now be able to push it forward and promote it now that it's got so much publicity.
Okay.
We had Louise McGeever here from the RSA last Thursday when Theresa Mannion and RT were here, and she was here as well to give us their full backing of the video.
Brilliant stuff. Mr. Noel Canning, is he there with you as well? I wonder, could I have a brief word, if that's okay?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very good, Niall. Obviously, the whole school very proud of Danny and Ellie and everyone involved in this project.
Yeah, on behalf of St. Catharines Vocational School, before this video was ever made, we're just short of 400 students here in the school, and these two students here in front of me play a vital role in everyday life in St. Catharines School. But I suppose with the increase of road fatalities, we took the initiative here, part of our RSA module here that Miss Gallagher teaches. We took initiative to come up with a road safety campaign. So the TYs worked very well together to design an ad, and we approached then Danny and Ellie here to discuss the ad and discuss then the role that they could play with highlighting this as a massive concern. And Ellie and Danny opened up and which was really beneficial and really good to see from my personal journey as well. My own mother passed away from cancer, and I suppose I never had that conversation at home, you know, and I still don't have that conversation at home. So, you know, and I think your listeners in the Donegal area, you know, we all lose somebody close to us and we probably don't open up. And that's why we bottle a lot of things up. And that's where Danny and Ellie have opened up for the first time, and they felt the time was right. And they have just played a massive part in it. As Miss Gallagher says, we welcomed Teresa Mannion and the RT team here last week, and that experience was great for the students, but also it gave the community, it gave these two students here a time to reflect, a time to think back on their own mother, which is never easy. It's never easy, and we never like talking about it, but it really got the community together. It got the community to remember their loved mother. And especially, you know, the opportunities that Danny and Ellie have out of this is brilliant. The RSA have approached them, hopefully in time, that could look at an ambassador roles for them. You know, the video Teresa Mannion got onto school yesterday, the Teresa Mannion to say that there's over 300,000 hits on the video and their story. And as Ellie rightly said, and Danny one time when they went to Teresa Mannion, if it saved one person, it's a success. Yeah, and that is the main thing that we want. The people at Donegal, as we approach the weekend and we approach the good weather, that just think before you overcrowd your car, think before you take that drink, and think, especially the phone. We're in a society now that the phone plays a huge part. Think. And have a look at the harm that it has done for this area of Killybegs, Brookless, Dunkaneely. The harm it has done. And please, please, as we go for the summer months, please be careful and be mature on the Donegal roads.
And, you know, obviously this is a video and an initiative that's coming from young people from a transition year cohort, but everyone needs to look at it. You know, everyone, doesn't matter what age you are, what gender you are, we all have a responsibility, and there are collisions caused by people of all different ages as well. So I think we can all have a look at it. Listen, thank you so very much to you, Mr. Niall Canning, and also Miss Caroline Gallagher, who I understand that she's very active in the RSA and road safety and what have you. And as well, a special thanks to you, Danny, and you, Ellie, for what yous are doing. It's amazing stuff. And often younger people are better at talking about things and dealing with emotions than us grown-ups are. So listen, fair play to all of you. It's a wonderful thing. And of course, we're going to share it out on our platforms as well. But for now, thank you, all of you.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
take
you,
care.
And have a good day.
All okay, right, you too. You. Bye-bye. Thank you very much indeed. A huge well done to Danny and Ellie. Great work for two bereaved children. My sincere condolences to them on the loss of their beloved mother in 2017. Well done to St. Catherine's School. That comes in from Mary there. We were speaking a little earlier to Norma Foley, who's in Inishowen at the moment. And I must say, it's lovely to speak to a minister out of Inishowen. And we were talking to about smartphones and smartphone usage. Of course, says smartphones aren't the biggest issue. The biggest issue is the sex education they're trying to force on our children at school. I would disagree, if that's okay with that. I'm going to read on the school, read on your comment here. But you want to see the filth and the abuse and the bullying and the name calling and the videoing and the shaming and the switching of heads and the stuff that goes on social media and through mobile phones is absolutely horrendous. But anyway, this caller believes the school curriculum is worse. They say that telling our kids boys can be girls and vice versa, and that children from aged 4 can do something that's not in the curriculum and feel pleasure. The government are grooming our children through the schools. Really, really important that we as adults, in the interests of child safety and child care, really make sure we know what's actually in the curriculum currently as we speak. Some of the stuff mentioned here isn't, but I take your point. Thank you very much for that. Should be an election every year. Plenty of money now available. Oh no, please, no elections every year. Just to remind you, coming up after 10 o'clock for the final 2 hours of the programme, we continue our series of local election debates. Our focus today will be on the Lifford-Stranorlar area. 6 seats, 12 candidates. In studio, we'll have Tony McDade of Sinn Féin, Charles Ward, 100% redress. Independent Councillor Frank McBurtie Jr., Rebecca McDade representing AIM2, Garvin Connolly from Fine Gael will also be in studio with us. If you have any questions specific to that local electoral area or points that you want us to put to the candidates, please get in touch with us now, 08660 25000. Now, Ireland has announced plans to officially recognise a Palestinian state. It comes as the three leaders of the coalition government held a press conference at government buildings yesterday morning. Mr Harris said that it was an important and historic day for Ireland and for Palestine. Israel have recalled their envoys to Ireland, claiming that Ireland's decision will encourage terrorism and more instability. Norway and Spain have also announced that they recognise or will recognise a Palestinian state. We're joined on the programme now by Fadal Mustafa, co-chair of the Donegal branch of the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. The significance of this news to you, Palestinians, the campaign, Fadal?
It's huge, to be honest, Greg. It's massive, but only, you know, if the Irish government's recognition to the Palestinian state is a first step towards the unequivocal support of the rightful Palestinian people for self-determination and the right of return of all refugees. So it's positive in a sense that now you have three more countries that recognize Palestine as a state in the UN. That's 143 out of 193 so far. It's positive in a way that Spain is a big player within the EU. It's positive that Ireland is the moral compass of the EU. And it's also significant that Norway is also a partner in a lot of economic activities within the European Union and outside the European Union as well.
Yeah, and some would say that there's already quite a lot of countries have recognised or have committed to recognise Palestine as a state. So what's the significance of a further three? I think it's really the status of both Spain and Ireland within the EU that makes this such a headline story. Am I correct in that?
Absolutely. Like I said, Spain is a major player within the EU economically, and also Ireland as well is a major player economically as well. But we also have to remember as well that this recognition has to be accompanied with concrete action from the Irish government to hold Israel accountable and punish Israel and pressure the apartheid state of Israel. Otherwise, it's just a mere symbolism and another just political gesture from the Irish government and the other European countries. So there needs to be more pressure now on other European countries to recognize the state of Palestine. And I hear also that another three countries, including, I believe, Slovenia, is in discussion at their parliament level to also maybe recognize Palestine as a state as well. So it is important, it is significant, it is symbolic on an international diplomatic level. It also upgrades the status of the Palestinian representatives here in Ireland as well, where now the upgrade is not is more of a recognition of an embassy, an ambassador, rather than a diplomatic representative or a mission representative.
Of course, there have been calls on countries to recognise Palestine as a state for an awful long time. As you've mentioned, many already have. And I think listeners are well aware that what the Palestinians are going through now did not begin, you know, late last year. But it did come really to the fore on the world stage after the Palestinian militant group Hamas launched an assault on Israel on the 7th of October, 1,200 people killed, more than 250 were taken to Gaza as hostages. This is according to Israeli tallies. Given the timing, do you think that there is some justification to the commentary that in some way this recognises or justifies the actions of Hamas on October 7th?
Not at all. It's a bizarre question because nothing justifies violence on either side. So that's a straightforward answer. But we always tend to bring back the conversation to the 7th of October and the denouncement of the action of the whatever Hamas did, and it is a crime. It is a crime against humanity. And now the ICC has actually issued papers, legal papers, to prosecute everybody who was involved in this crime. So it is a positive action. But we must not forget the elephant in the room, Greg. You know, the occupation, the apartheid system, the oppression of the Palestinian people for the past 76 years, their denial of self-determination. The elephant is massive, and it's only going to grow if we don't go back to the initial
I understand
problem.
That, but I can't at the same time not recognize that action and that loss of life and put it into the context of timing. And you've responded to that, and that's fine. Just to reiterate, you know, you recognize and welcome this move by the Irish and the Spanish. What do you believe specifically the Irish need to do next to build on this move?
Well, like I said, first of all, I think it must end all trade with Israel. Okay, I think the Doyle has now to enact the Occupied Territories Bill that was enacted and passed by the Shannon back in 2018. I think Ireland has the moral obligation. Ireland is taking positive steps due to the mass movement in solidarity of the Palestinian people on the streets, which has put pressure to divest in several Israeli banks from the Irish government, to commit to the joining of the South African genocide case in the ICJ, and also for the review of the EU-Israeli association agreement. So that's more pressure, but that's what needs to be happen at the moment, rather than just saying we recognize the state of Israel and full stop. There needs to be more done.
Fadal Mustafa, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Have a good day. Fadal is co-chair of the Donegal branch of the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, 086 60 25,000. A guarded welcome, he said there. Right, one more reminder for you, by the way, that we continue our series of debates today. We are on the 9 till noon show, focusing on the local electoral areas. Today, we are in the municipal district of Lifford Stranorlar. 6 seats, 12 candidates. Niall McConnell is an independent. He was invited to take part in the debate today. He declined. Gerry Crawford of Fianna Fáil was invited to take part in today's debate. He declined. But we still have a stellar lineup: Garvan Connolly of Fine Gael, Rebecca McDade of Ain't Do, Frank McBurtie Jr. independent, Charles Ward 100% redress, Tony McDade Sinn Féin. And if you have any questions or points that you want to put to that panel that do affect the Lifford Stranorlar area, please get in touch with us now, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Hello all. Question for your listeners. My daughter, who is 20, has been asked to babysit for a neighbour with 3 children. Can someone give an idea of what the going rate to charge for a babysitting service is? Thank you so much. So presumably, is it per hour? Is it an ongoing thing? Like, is this the care of children throughout the course of the day? Or is it, you know, for a couple of hours when people are going out? I think it would be useful to have that clarification. But anyway, maybe there's an hourly rate. And maybe it's adjusted because there are 3 children. So, family member asked to babysit for a neighbour with 3 children. What is the going rate, or what's the going charge for a babysitting service? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, I have a neighbour that had something stolen outside her house and she lives alone. She should be entitled to get a security camera installed for her free of charge when that happens to you. Indeed, it probably would be useful. Is there a fund there for that? Maybe there is. I don't know. OK, let us take a break. We have the news, we have the obituary notices, and then we're going to switch streams after the obituary notices. And if you want to watch debates, get on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, or on X, Highland Radio Donegal.